The Ryan Tubridy Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sky Broadband. With our broadband, your world is limitless. Live beyond.
At 9:25 this Tuesday morning, very good to have you with us. My guest this morning has found, well, I suppose you could say the recipe for success. We've been talking about baking already this morning by trying out lots of different things, and including the swapping of one vocation for another. Graham Hertrich, good morning.
Good morning, Ryan. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. And Hertrich is spelled H-E-R-T-E-R-I-C-H.
That's exactly it, yes.
Nearly as peculiar as Tubridy.
Well, so, I don't know like your name, but if any other Hertriches in the country, they're related to me.
There's a bit of that with us, too.
We're one family, yeah.
Tell me about the provenance of the name, please, Graham.
So my great-great-grandfather was a Carl Godfrey Hertrich. He moved from Bavaria to Preston in England.
Yes.
He passed away about 1909. But his son, George Hertrich, my great-grandfather, moved to Newry to set up a butcher's up there. It didn't work out, and eventually he opened the butcher's in Naas.
Yes.
In about 1926. He had 11 children, one of which is my grandfather, Ernest, who moved to Athy and opened the butcher's there in 1942.
Yes, and so the butcher has been there for...
Yeah, no, it closed in 1997.
Right, but it was there
for decades. For a good while, yeah.
And a lot of people listening in will remember. Was the name over the door?
Oh, the name was over the door in Athy, but names over butchers all around the country. Most of his kids went and opened pork butchers. So all the ones on this side of the country, so Newbridge, Naas, Kildare, Athy, they're all closed. But on the west, so Galway, Mayo, Castlebar, Longford, they're all still going.
And are they all Hertriches?
They're all still Hertriches.
Oh, great, okay. Now I have that connection now. They're passing by in the street.
Yep.
Okay, good to know that. And so you then would have been brought up in what part of the country, Graham?
So I'm from Athy in County Kildare. That's where I was born and raised.
And that you went to school, obviously, and all was fine in primary school.
I went to primary school in Athy and went to secondary school in Carlow.
And why was that?
Back then, I wanted to be an architect. And I had this thing, and my parents really encouraged it. I couldn't do mechanical drawing in Athy. So I was very young, but they gave me the support. I said, if you want to do this, you can go to school in Carlow. And they found a school in Carlow that did mechanical drawing, and I gave it up after first year.
So it wasn't for you after all.
It wasn't for me. It wasn't for me, definitely not.
But you motored on through, and what did you find the direction you wanted to go in then?
So I found food. From transition year, that's I found food. I was so lucky. My mum is a brilliant cook, and I always had a passion for food. And in transition year, I went on work experience to a little house called Tondagee House, just outside of Athy. And I found the most amazing man, one of the most influential men in my life, Mark Molloy.
Yes.
And he taught me to enjoy food and cook food.
So he was the kind of that critical teacher.
Oh, yes, he
was. That we all need and meet.
Exactly. He was an inspiration in my life. Unfortunately, he's no longer with us, but he gave me the start of my career that I really needed. Yeah, he was an amazing man.
And you pursued that then?
I went
gastronomic road.
Yeah, I went to college. I was lucky enough back in the CERT days to win a scholarship with CERT to go to Waterford. It was an IT when I started, and it was a WIT by the time I left. And I'd done culinary arts in Waterford, yeah.
And where did that take you after that?
So I, very lucky, I worked in places like Mount Juliet, Marlfield House, did stages in Chapter 1 in Dublin, Peacock Alley.
All the greats.
Yeah, was very lucky with the type of places that I was working. But I know where this is going next. All through that, there was something else niggling in the back of my mind.
Well, let's talk about the demands and the pressures and the hours on somebody in the catering business. It's relentless.
It is very, very long hours.
Yeah.
When I look back at it, now that I'm self-employed, I'm doing as many hours. But back then, as a young teenager, it was really, really tough. Mm. You're talking 80, 90 hours a week in some of these restaurants. And things haven't really changed that much.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the guys getting their Michelin star last night. I know a lot of them. I know a good few of them now over the last couple of years, and they're working just as hard still nowadays. Yeah,
so they fully deserve.
Oh yes,
the
without a shadow of a doubt. Yeah. I was actually in Mount Juliet just a couple of years before they got their Michelin star.
Right. Okay. So you probably played a role in that. So let's not underestimate that. But you'd mentioned there that the niggle at the back of your mind, and then it's the niggle that provides us with our twist in the road for you, because just when you thought you might be on one route in life and heading towards and keeping it all things baking, cooking, and whatever you might be doing, something else was bubbling under. What was happening?
So my father has been organising trips to Lourdes, originally with the Order of Malta and then with the Carmelite Order for years, for as long as I can remember. He goes every year to Lourdes, helping out with the sick. It's working with the sick. That's his passion, is getting people to Lourdes. And I was lucky enough to start going in transition year, and I used to go every year. So this, inside me, something grew. This feeling of a call to religious life was there. So at the age of 21, I decided to join the Carmelites.
Now, why the Carmelites?
They were an order that were part of my life. So that's who I used to travel to Lourdes with.
Okay.
I always felt I had a calling to religious life, not to the priesthood. So I wanted an order where I could remain a brother and not necessarily go on to be a priest.
Why? Could you differentiate the two for us?
I don't actually quite. I never had a feeling of I really wanted to be a priest. It was just a calling to religious life, to live in community, to serve a community. And that's the feeling that I had. So that's why the Carmelites really spoke to me, that I could just remain a brother within the order. Like, it would probably have led on to something like teaching or something like that within, like, the turn your college or whatever. I don't know what road I would have went down as a brother. But yeah, that's why I chose the Carmelites, plus their connection with my life.
Right. And the Carmelites, I don't know much about. All I remember as a kid was the Carmelite nuns.
Yeah.
As a name. Were they enclosed or something?
They are enclosed. They're an enclosed order. And then you have two different, so there's the Discalced Carmelites and the OCM Carmelites. So I was with the regular Carmelites, so to speak, and White Friar Street Church, Turnure College, Knockline, and this beautiful place down in Kinsale. So they're all over the country.
So did you have to leave a restaurant and say, "Lads, I'm out. I'm going to join"?
Yeah,
the Carmelites.
I was working in Mount Juliet, and I always remember having a conversation with the Peter Brennan was the executive chef down there, and I told him what I was going to do, and he was so supportive. He said he'd always have a job for you if you ever wanted to come back.
Yeah.
But they thought it was a little bit mad, but there's your man going off to be, as they said, the priest. But
brother, how old were you at that point?
21.
Okay, young.
Yeah.
But not, I suppose, in the great scheme of things, not that young, because, you know, most of the, down through the history of time, priests would have been even younger.
Right,
as you go to college or what have you.
Yeah. But I also had this thing as well, I kind of wanted to get that career behind me. So I wanted to have something to fall back on if it wasn't going to work out. Thankfully, I did.
Thankfully, because, and we'll come back to that in a moment. But to join the Carmelites then, did you have to pass tests or exams or...?
No. So it is so you spend your first year, so we would have been when I was about 20, I kind of started a process of a year of spiritual guidance and meeting with different members of the Carmelite Order, and kind of they would kind of assess you as the year kind of goes on.
Okay.
And then make a decision of whether you're suitable for the order or not. And then I was accepted in, and I joined in, and I've started my novitiate.
And does that involve wearing particular garb?
Yeah. So I wore a completely brown habit with a brown scapular,
Oh, like a Franciscan.
Yeah.
Really, that's the look of the order.
Yeah.
Was that peculiar to put that on for the first time? Was it a badge of honour?
It was peculiar. I always remember going to be measured for it.
Yeah.
And it was kind of a bit odd, I will be honest. But then it is such an honour to wear it.
Why was it odd?
Looking at myself for the very first time in it, I was like, it's just, this is a decision that I've been thinking about for a long time. It kind of finally happened, and it's so obvious. And I remember going to Lourdes again, and it's like this religious, they all kind of spot each other. You're looked at in a different way by lay people and by other religious.
In what way, do you think?
So you kind of, the other religious, you kind of got a nod of approval every now and again from other religious. And lay people, there's a tendency to put religious on a bit of a pedestal.
Okay.
That's
really interesting.
Especially a young person going, people that I had known for a lot of years, going to Lourdes, and the whole circle of friends that I had was a little bit of a putting you up on a pedestal, a little bit different.
Yeah, that's it. So they saw you as an elevated person, which you were not very comfortable with.
No, I wasn't.
You said, I'm still same old Greg.
I'm still same old me. I going to Lourdes, and I was like, all my friends were there, so the habit would come off at night time, and it was into the jeans and t-shirt, and let's go for a drink.
Yeah, and were you able to do that?
Absolutely not.
And how long did you stay in the Carmelites?
I was 2 years.
2 years.
So I'd done my novitiate and the first year of philosophy in Milltown.
And how would you describe it as an experience, the 2 years, Graham?
Absolutely brilliant.
Really?
Don't regret one second of it.
Great.
I look back at that time with so such joy. Yeah. I really, really do. And it has informed the rest of my life and made me a different person. And I still, like, the Carmelites are a contemplative order, so I would still have times where I would just sit back and, like, I'm not as religious as I used to be. I don't even describe myself as a Catholic anymore. I describe myself as a Christian. Mm-hmm. But the ethos of the order has massively, it's always going to rub off in my life.
So what was the to use that expression they use now, what was the takeaway for you from that 2 years?
Just to be able to step back from my own life and actually look at it.
Yes.
Yes, I do get stressed, don't get me wrong. But sure. To be able to step back and look at everything, look at the bigger picture. That's one of the biggest things that came from it, yeah.
And do you still pray?
No, I wouldn't say I pray in the classic sense of praying.
Do you believe in Jesus Christ?
No.
And do you believe in God?
I believe in a God, which God I don't know.
And do you believe that the Virgin Mary was Jesus' mother and she ascended into heaven and had her Immaculate Conception?
It's one of these things I haven't given a lot of thought to anymore. I don't. I just try to live a good Christian life. And a good Christian life for me is being the best person you can be to yourself and others.
Not to be... But you would have had 2 years to contemplate all of these things.
Yeah. And I believed it at the time.
So did you contemplate your way out of religion?
No, my sexuality came into it then. And I felt I was always celibate when I was in the order, but it got to the point where I knew I needed a more loving relationship with a person.
Intimacy.
I needed that. And that was going to affect my life if I didn't have it.
Okay. And
that was my reason, my decision for leaving.
Okay. That's different to your reason for not believing in the fundamentals of the Catholic Church.
My views of it has changed. You know what I mean? It has been a very slow. I would have been when I first left. Yes, still very religious.
Yeah.
But just over the last 20 years since I've left, I don't feel the need for it as much, for the religion as much.
Okay. Do you go to mass?
No, I don't go to mass. I still go to Lourdes to work. But that work, it's the work that does it for me.
You talk about being Christian, right? And that the first five letters of that word are Christ.
Yeah.
So do you believe in, but you don't believe in Christ, but you believe in an ethos of kindness?
Definitely.
You want to help people, but not in the name of a putative, some would say, quote unquote, a spiritual leader who may or may not have existed as you see it.
Yes, exactly, yeah. So it's
intriguing, really.
It is, and it's just I suppose my life has been informed by all these teachings, but it's just I don't believe in it as much anymore.
Okay. Yeah. Well, let's take it then from the moment where you left.
Yeah.
And when you came out, was it like leaving boarding school or you were in a different life.
I was in a completely different life, and I was very I came out as gay before I entered into religious life as well.
So you would have been what age when you came out?
So I was 18 when I came out.
And had you had any encounters to speak of?
At that point, no.
No.
I just knew I was gay.
Okay. Had you talked about it freely or was it a secret?
It was a secret until I was on a work placement in Tremor and I met some like-minded people, and that's where my eyes were open. At 18. Yeah.
And tell me a bit more about that.
So I came out,
But in Tremor, tell me about that moment.
Oh, in Tremor, it was just, it was a friend, Lisa, and we just got on. We were out drinking. We only had met after a couple of days. We were out drinking one night and she says, I've got a girlfriend. And I was like, wow, this is amazing.
Yeah.
Like, you're the first really openly gay person I'd met. And I told her that I thought I was gay.
Yeah.
And then I'd had a couple of minor experiences, let's put it like that. And that summer I decided to come out to my parents, yeah.
Amazing, isn't it? And how did that go, by the way?
That went really well. My mum was a little bit shocked. My dad was so supportive. We sat up all night long talking and, like, So much so, I didn't even realise that it was only had become legal to be gay like 2 years earlier in Ireland. I didn't even know that.
Yeah, you hadn't been up. Well, you would have been 16 years old.
I mean, so like I wasn't listening to news and stuff like that. So it wasn't kind of
on the radar.
I wasn't on the radar. So when I discovered this, I was like, wow. But my dad was all my family are so supportive.
Okay, so that was all good.
Yeah, yeah.
And you said, right, I'm a gay man, ready the world at my feet, and now I'm going to join in a closed door or an order.
A religious order. But I never denied who I was. I was always an openly gay man, even when I was in religious life, yeah.
So you leave the order.
Yeah.
With a view to doing what?
I hadn't a clue. I absolutely hadn't a clue. I knew I didn't want to go back into the rat race of the restaurants working 90 hours a week. So I was lucky enough through a neighbour to end up working in 3D on Dawson Street, which was an Irish-speaking coffee shop back in the day.
An Irish-speaking coffee shop
owned by Gwaelin.
Okay, and that would have been... And how was your Irish at that time?
It was dreadful.
Okay, well, there you go.
I had foundation-level Irish.
Cup on tay.
Yeah. So I was in the middle of the interview and they said to me, you know, this is an Irish-speaking coffee shop. And I was like, a what? Yeah. So, but they took the risk with me and I ended up being Bannisdor of the rest of 3D. So.
Bannisdor, yeah. We associate that with a different type of
I know,
day.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
nevertheless,
yeah.
You got there and you enjoyed that. And I think it was about a month after you left the order.
Yeah.
Something very, very important happened to you.
Yes, it was. I met my partner in crime, Dahi.
And how? Tell me, what happened?
So we just met through mutual friends. And
where?
In town, it used to be, where it's now Panty Bar, it used to be Goo Boo.
Okay.
And we just met there through mutual friends.
What happened in terms of sparks?
We just spent the night chatting.
Yeah.
There was nothing further. We just chatted all night long. And then a few days later, I was like, I need to find this guy again. And then for the next, it was January 15/16, because we can't figure out which date of the week it was.
Sure.
That's when we actually got together. But when we were discussing it that night, we were like, he was going out certain nights looking for me and I was going out certain nights looking for him, and we kept on missing each other. And then, the 16th of January, we got
you
together.
You managed to... The ships met in the same harbour.
We collided, yes, exactly.
And
we're together ever since.
How many years are you together now?
Nearly 18 years.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Which is tremendous. And you got married.
We got married in... We got civil partnered in 2012 and got married in 2016 on the same day.
How did that feel?
Celebrating our civil partnership with all our family and friends was amazing. We're up in Capure Estate, absolutely amazing weekend. But 4 years later on the day when I actually said I do, because you never said I do in a civil ceremony, a civil partnership. So to say just I do, and it just took my breath away. I was like, our immediate family, there was only 12 people with us, and it was just, I was like, that's the day. I would still refer to 2012 as the day I got married, but deep down in my heart, it was 2016, that's when I got married to the love of my life.
Good. That's really, really beautiful, and it kind of makes sense of it all, doesn't it? The referendum, the result, the happiness,
and the long
wait, but
we got there.
Getting there as a country,
exactly,
it was important. But anyway, that's another day, and I'm delighted for your happiness.
Thank you very much.
But we also you also have to make a crust in every sense.
Yeah.
Figuratively.
2012 was a big year for us. Besides our civil partnership, Dahi got made redundant the week before it.
Oh no.
And he decided to go back, use springboard to go back to college. And I was like, yeah, sure, I'm in a great job. It'll all be fine. He went back to college, and then on the 31st of October, I got made redundant.
Halloween?
Yep.
Of all the days?
31st of October.
Okay.
What happened was, 2 months earlier, so in September of 2012, I had just out of curiosity went to the Spade Enterprise Centre.
Yeah.
And with the plan that maybe in 2 years I might think about opening my own place. But as I said, 31st of November got made redundant. 31st of October got made redundant. The 1st of November, I got a phone call offering me a unit within the Spade Enterprise Centre.
Okay.
And it was just one of these immediate things of, if I'm going to do it, I have to do it now because I need the Christmas rush to get me through when everyone's on a diet in January, February, and March.
Right. what did you want to open?
So the people that were letting me go were also closing their bakery. But
sure.
Because the job that I was in, I had set up a bakery for them. So I knew they still needed a supplier. They weren't closing the coffee shops, they were closing the production. So they still needed a supplier. So I asked them, would they just let me go, give me my redundancy, and I'll have a bakery set up and I'll start supplying you.
Even better. So everyone's winning here.
Yeah, so for 1 year they agreed to it and they said they'll take me on for 1 year, which was fantastic, and that's what we did.
What did you bake? What was the big selling? I'm a big fan of baking.
We literally started with cupcakes, and I know you don't like cupcakes, but that's what we started with.
I'm not a cupcake guy, but go on, it's too much icing.
So that's what we did for the first year. And then we slowly introduced new products, and my idea was to become a central, or like a kind of like a central distribution for independent coffee shops. So I could supply them with a few muffins and a few scones and a few cupcakes and all these little bits fresh every day. But because they were buying larger quantities, it worked for me. And that's still my, that's what I do. I supply independent coffee shops with a range of bakery products fresh every day.
So you supply them, you don't sell them.
I do have a shop as well. Yeah, now. Yeah. We did open a shop in 18 months ago in Rialto Village.
In Rialto Village?
Yeah.
I know
it's just
well.
Called The Bakery by the Cupcake Bloke, and that's what we opened.
So the Cupcake Bloke, this is your kind of Twitter
nickname,
huh?
Yeah.
But
it's a nickname
it's
now,
stuck,
yeah.
And it's stuck, and it's a good name for it. But I'd like to ask you about your brother, Patrick, or Pappy as he's known.
Yeah,
tell me
yeah.
about Pappy.
So Pappy has Down syndrome. He is 3 years younger than me, but he's always been kind of in and out of employment. He lives in he was in St. John of God's in Selbridge. He now lives independently down in Selbridge, but he travels up 3 days a week to work with me in the bakery, and that is one of the best things that I've been able to do since opening the bakery.
I
is actually
it.
Give him a job, and I absolutely love having him in the bakery. He's just a breath of fresh air, comes in on his Tuesday, and it's just like a hug for everybody, and he kind of just decreases that stress level in the kitchen.
Imagine.
He's just a great force in the place.
How old are you now, Graham?
I'm 42.
And how old is Pappy?
He's 39.
39, just doing the sums there.
Yeah, yeah.
And Pappy, in terms of communication, tell me about that.
So he is deaf and nonverbal.
Yeah.
So we use a sign language called LOVE to communicate. LOVE is a very basic level sign language. It's more gestures than anything else.
Show me, hi, good morning, how are you?
So just you
I was on the radio.
You wouldn't even ask, how are you? It'd be like, hi.
Okay, so a salute from the far
yeah, and kind of, are you good?
Thumbs up.
You kind
okay.
of put
so
in a question-y way, if that makes
sense.
Quite
useful for people who aren't used to sign language.
It's kind of one of these things, it's like, that's sausages.
Right,
two fingers pushed together and you have like a string of sausages. Yeah,
okay.
So little things like that, it's quite simple. But he's my brother. It's more than just the communication through love. I can understand him. He'll say words to me, even though he's nonverbal. He will say, like, he gets game. That's my name. And he says dahi, and he has mammy and daddy. So he has, like, basic words. But just from, I suppose, knowing him for 30-odd years... my communication with him would be stronger than most. And that's one of the great things of working with him 3 days a week. I have the ability to build that communication skills with him.
And it must be lovely to have him in, not just in your life, but actually
in my workplace, everything. It's just brilliant.
I can see that makes sense. Are you making tea brack?
Yes,
good. That's all I need to know, because it's that time of year.
You have a gold medal one there.
Did you bring one in?
I won a Blos this weekend, I have to say. Won a Blos and Heron Award, a gold Blos and Heron Award.
Congratulations,
thank
I
you
didn't
very
know
much,
that.
Yes.
We only invited you in for the tea cake. I mean, the story was a bonus.
You have the Blos tea cake, you have Blos tea rack and the Blos biscuit cake here now as well.
And the brisket cake.
Yeah, that one this year.
Is it okay if I don't share it with my colleagues? You're okay with that. Myself is that way. That's great news. Congratulations on all of the above.
Thank you very much.
And people can head into Rialto now and get themselves a nice gold medal winning slice of cake from Graham Hertrich and friends. Has your guest tried going to a humanist meeting? He sounds like he might fit in just fine. You haven't tried it yet?
No, should try it.
Each to their own, but he sounds like a nice man, but the fundamentals of Christianity is a belief in Christ. You can't call yourself one and not believe in the other. It's like calling yourself a doctor but having no qualifications. Food for thought.
Yeah.
John Hertrich, fourth generation, carries on the family tradition in Lombard Street in Galway, has added beautiful innovations to the original products, a real treat in the centre of Galway, from Liam Stenson. No relation, no connection. Somebody happy to say. Hey, listen, I'm delighted for you, Graham, and for Dahi, and for Pappy and the gang, and really appreciate your coming in to see us today. And congratulations on the awards.
Brilliant.
And here's to your future happiness. Thanks
for
joining us this morning.
Thank you.
12 minutes to 10, back after this.